Welcome home. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. And of course, Baltimore Positive. We are going to be doing something very special on April the 9th. We're going to be bringing the Maryland Crab Cake Tour presented by our friends at the Maryland Lottery back out to Costas Inn. I'm going to be at the bar there on Wednesday night, and we're going to be there April 9th. The Orioles open the Red Sox season at Fenway Park on that day at a 2 o'clock game, and we're going to be there all morning. I thought we were going to be talking about baseball, the new ownership, and Cal Ripken, and like all of the stuff, and then the Key Bridge tragedy happened on Tuesday. I've been a little bit absent from radio the last couple of days. I was at the NFL owners meetings, chasing Steve Bisciotti and Eric DaCosta around. We were in spring training, Luke and I, from Sarasota to Fort Myers, back to Sarasota, up to Tampa, over through Bradenton and Lakeland. And blah, blah, blah. So I've just been doing baseball and football, and the bridge fell. And my dear friend, Janet Marie Smith, who I've been stalking for months now, she's been in Korea and building things and like all of this stuff and opening the Dodgers season as an executive vice president of the Dodgers. This was going to be about new ownership and Camden Yards and spending $600 million on a new stadium and how fun that is for people like Janet Marie. And lo and behold, I went to Sarasota, Janet Marie, and saw your work there. And then I went to Fort Myers and saw the monster there and thought of the other monster north. And I had you on my brain, and I think you were texting me literally when I was in Fort Myers saying, are we on? Are we on? We're going to do some baseball the day before opening day, and now it's going to rain and like all this. But the Key Bridge, and for all of your accomplishments and your awesomeness and the fact that you're credited with Camden Yards and all of these things, you live in Baltimore. You're a Baltimorean. And,
yeah.
You know, and I love you and you love me, and here we are. We're going to do baseball in Rubenstein. Peter died since we set this up, and we're not even going to talk about that because, like, the Key Bridge, I've cried three times. I know you're going to make me cry. You're in Los Angeles. When's the last time you were in Baltimore? I saw you were in Korea last week.
Yeah, it's been a couple of weeks since I was in Baltimore, but it is home for me. Has been since 1989 when I moved there to work for the Orioles. And Key Bridge is such a symbol of Baltimore, you know, everything from the name to that sort of beautiful truss that defined that span of the harbor. It's a reminder of Baltimore's roots. It's a reminder of Baltimore's working class heart. It's a reminder of how important our place in the geography of America is. I think that was just, it's so sad on every level, just a tragedy on every level.
You know, I think of things like 9/11 in a building and a symbol not being there. And we were supposed to be in Paris the day the church caught on fire. Niels, who you've met, who saved my wife's life, we were meeting them in Paris that day. And I think of that incident and what in our community, and we had a great fire here that I've read up on, and I'm sure you've read up on, in the history of this awful thing that happened here over a century ago. But for my lifetime, I've looked at that bridge almost every day of my life, right?
Yeah.
Like, it was out the window of my childhood. It was out the window of the first home I bought on Kane Street. Literally, you could see it from the bedroom window, see the trussing. I lived at the harbor, and this is strange. This is where I lived, Janet Marie. You knew this. 23rd floor. If you're looking at camp, this is what I looked at out of my bedroom window, my office window, for 19 years. And we did not have a view of the Key Bridge from our place. We had three views. I had a view down Charles Street, all the way north and east, over to, like, you could see Dundalk a little bit, but you couldn't see the Key Bridge, and you couldn't see Fort McHenry from my place. So I did not have a view of the Key Bridge, but there's nowhere you ever went where you didn't see it. It's so visible from every high point in Highland Town, everywhere, and I haven't seen it yet, Janet Marie. I was in Florida all day, Monday into Tuesday, and I flew back Tuesday evening, and the plane took the western pattern as it came up through almost Annapolis. I saw the Bay Bridge, and I thought, oh my, and then we just banked west. I haven't physically seen it yet. I think I've cried 10 times so far, only twice on the air, talking about my Uncle Norman. Breaks me up. I don't know that I'm prepared to see it architecturally. And tell me what that does, because you're the architectural person.
I'm on something like that. I think we're all human and view it the same way. And your analogy to the World Trade Center is very similar. I for a decade after that happened, I couldn't look at the New York skyline without feeling the loss, you know, the just the missing link. And I think that's the sad thing about looking at the harbor is that that beautiful marker just isn't with us today. And I'm so city centric that all of my, you know, I live in the city. I work downtown. I've always had a view of it more than experience on it. But that marker was terribly important to identifying the harbor, just as the World Trade Centers were to New York. But your mention of Paris and the cathedral is really, I think, noteworthy too, because there was never any loss of conviction that that was going to be redone. And Paris just did it. And I hope that we in Baltimore, in the state of Maryland, can do the same thing with that bridge. It was one of the most beautiful trusses I've ever seen, and I hope that its replacement is a reminder of that resiliency of our community.
I don't want to be flippant, and it's early, and you're gonna make me laugh and cry during this conversation. Are you qualified to be that person to pick that? I wonder what's gonna be there. I mean, you know,
It's an engineering feat. It really is. That is just such a beautiful engineering feat. And there was a delicacy to that truss because it was a single truss, which is, of course, the reason it came down so quickly. But there was just a beauty to it that I hope the designer, that its successor, gives us the same sculptural qualities.
Well, give me your day on Tuesday because you've had a hell. I had you on. I'm like, we're going to talk about awards. Are we going to talk about new ownership? Are we going to talk about Camden Yards and history and break bubbly? Are we going to talk about the Dodgers? And there's been things going on in your organization the last 2 weeks. You were in Korea. Are we going to talk about that? I've been in that ballpark because of you too. And then the bridge thing is just, it's raw. It's really raw. And I'm sure it's raw for you. I got it at 5:50 in the morning in Orlando. I mean, I'm at Disney World, right? Like, I'm Lake Buena Vista. Kids are up beating on the walls, and I put on CNN, and there's Johnny O. Is the first thing I see. It's 5:50 in the morning, and you know, I wasn't prepared for that. I don't know. It was, you know, at 10 o'clock at night where you were, right?
Yes, it was just a little later than that. I hadn't gone to bed, so I saw it before I saw it. I was still up, and it kept me up for some time after that. I mean, these symbols of who we are really real. You know, I think that's one thing I've always enjoyed about my work is that I have a chance to be a steward of places that are seared into people's memories. And we sometimes take for granted the physical world around us and how meaningful they are as symbols of day-to-day life or just touch points. And I've been struck at how many beautiful photographs I've seen of the Key Bridge on social media since then. You know, everyone's got their own picture of it. We've all thought of it as a, you know, as a work of art.
I knew you were going to make me cry. I had John Hoey on during my Cup of Super Bowl week. We had him on over at Coco's over, you know, Lauraville. And I told him, I said, I couldn't go near 33rd Street for years.
Yeah, me too. Me
It
too.
freaked me out.
Yeah, me too. You always expect there to be a ghost of the building, and there's not. You know, you always expect there'll be some more tangible evidence of the past, and unless someone crafts that, there's simply not. And it is sad. I mean, I recently went to 33rd Street, and I was struck by the way the tour guide, it was a Sabre conference, and I was interested in their bus tour of all of the ballparks that have ever been hosted in the city of Baltimore. And I love going to visit where the Baltimore Black Sox had played, and course, going to the original Oriole Park. I mean,
They
those
have
are really
beer there, Janet Marie.
of
You
course
know what I
they
mean?
do.
They have,
Yes,
you know, that's the best part of
it's
that
easy
place.
to love, right? But it's also so fun because, you know, you can go stand for a home plate. You have to have someone take you because it's not in the tavern itself. But you can go stand where home plate was, and you can see directly down the first base line. So anyway, it's fun when there's some tangible evidence of what was there. And hopefully the commitment to rebuild this bridge is not only real, but is real and hasty and beautiful.
All right, so I'll move on from that because we could go all day, and we're going to get a crab cake at some point, and there'll be a plan, and there'll be all this, and I'm already starting the campaign right now here at 12 o'clock on Wednesday the 27th. Opening day hadn't even started, and I started the campaign that you designed the trust. So you have at it, even if you're not qualified. Let me believe that it'll be
Well,
more beautiful if you are involved.
but as you know, I don't actually design anything. I oversee my project, so I'm lucky to have a fantastic
All
team
right.
of
Well, then you
architects
stay
and
with
engineers. So.
stadiums. And so I'll move to baseball just for a second because I just got back from Sarasota, and it speaks to me that I was telling Luke, we went down together, and I was telling Luke, I said, I sat in that stadium when it was like an erector set kind of falling apart. The White Sox were playing the Tigers in 1994, three or four, in Ed Smith Stadium, and it wasn't a very attractive place at that point. And I remember sitting there with Sparky Anderson and him talking my ear off in the dugout about, "Law, your cousin Louie." And I had these memories of that place. And then I went back when you, right before you got a hold of it and then got a hold of it. And it was so beautiful. And after 15 years, it needs a coat of paint more than anything else because I think it sits in the Florida heat and gets baked in just an awful way, like everything down there does, needs to be repainted. Disney repaints every 5 years. But I see these things and I say, all right, new ownership takes over. We got a great team. We're going to be great here, right, this time. And great players and all this spirit and Peter aside and all of that. That's all over with. We have a new thing here. There's so much for owners to think about, including an owner who was clearly leaving and wasn't painting things that needed to be painted after 15 years. But this is where you come in, Janet Marie Smith, is that you've been in these projects where someone takes over a place and comes in and says, I want to do something new, exciting, fresh, awesome. I mean, Chelsea just did it over in Europe with you about a beautiful old soccer stadium built into a neighborhood that I attended years ago and saw I saw Beckham play there with Man U. I would just say for Baltimore people, and you're one of them, even though you work for the Dodgers, and we'll set that aside for a minute. This is such an exciting thing and a dawn of something different. And there's money in the bank to do it. There's great players on the field. This is, as I say with Deepak Chopra, it's pure potentiality for the Orioles right now.
Well, I have been lucky enough to have been called in by several owners over the decades, as they look to make their mark. And you're spot on. That is often when someone buys a new club, they are interested in sending a little Valentine to fans and saying, "We see you. You're here." When Todd Boehly bought Chelsea Football Club in London a couple of years ago, he and Badon asked us to come in and just give it a quick refresh. You know, there was no fantasy that there was going to be an overhaul immediately because it's such a complex urban environment and there's property that needs to be acquired, et cetera. But it had been sitting in its COVID state for well past COVID, and they just wanted the fans to know, "We hear you. We know there are things that need to be done with the food and beverage, with the retail, with the way the entry is being managed, with squishing people in. Can we give them more space?" And it was very much the same kind of kit of parts that we used at Dodger Stadium 10 years ago when Guggenheim bought the Dodgers. I'll never forget Stan Kasten telling me in August of 2012, he said, "Look, we have one chance to make a good first impression as the new ownership group. And I don't want the players to come back and hear about a new clubhouse. I want them to come back to a new clubhouse in April." And so, in 6 months, we took out all of the lower level seats at Dodger Stadium, went down, added twice the square footage to the lower level so that we could double the size of both the visiting team and the home team clubhouse and had it finished. You know, that was the assignment. There wasn't any like, if this, then that. It's like, get it done. And I love the energy that comes with that kind of newness. And of
That's
course, you
essential,
know
isn't
that.
it? I mean, that's literally, that has to happen, and that will happen when David Rubenstein spends $1.7 billion on a baseball team. Like, you come in and you're expect to everything about it, expectations are, things are going to change here, right? I mean, they just are. They always do.
I think they always do. I don't pretend to have any inside knowledge into how he plans to run the club. But I just know from my experience with other ownership groups that there's usually an opportunities that have been waiting, in part because the seller has, they didn't wake up one morning and say, "Hey, I think I'll get rid of the club." That has been coming for some time, often years in the making. And so it's a sort of ripe opportunity to add a new coat of paint, to do something that really sends a signal to the fans and to the players too, that there's an opportunity that to be honored.
Anything that makes me bring up David Modell makes me smile. And, you know, I was constantly, you know, bugging David about stadium issues and the new stadium and escalators and this and that. And he would, you know, once he knew he was not going to be involved, he'd say, that's going to be Steve. That's going to be the next guy. The next guy's going to do that. The next guy's going to do that. And we've been waiting for the next guy here a long, long time. And for the city and for baseball and the heritage and where you are with building or being credited with Camden Yards. And obviously Peter's passing this week. I'll open the mic for you on all of that. But more than that, that the possibilities and the potential of you living here, of how glorious the history is, how rich it is. You built this facility that has its own thing that we don't think about Memorial Stadium here other than crying for it. We don't think of, well, I like the way it smelled, but that's a ballpark thing. But I think that we're about to do the next thing here. And you were part of the last thing, and you live here, and you're in the baseball environment. And the Dodgers want the Orioles better. Major League Baseball. We all want the Orioles to be the
Yeah.
best they can be, right? And that's
Well,
coming.
yeah. Well, with the Dodgers' encouragement, Fran Weld, who's formerly with the San Francisco Giants, but also lives in Baltimore, and I have started a new company, Canopy, and that's 20 people based out of Baltimore, and that is primarily what we do is work on sports related facilities and the urban environments they're in. So you're right, we can't help but think about it all day, every day. It is what we do. And I think it's just there's a joy in thinking about the city and about the changes for Baltimore. And certainly the city itself is ready for a generational change. One of the things that attracted me to Baltimore in the first place was having studied the city as a case study in my urban planning classes. I knew about the Inner Harbor and the boldness of the creation of that. I mean, think about that. If you rewind the tape, the way I've always studied Baltimore and learned about it was that it was the port itself that created the economic engine that made the city what it was. And when containerization came in and sent the port to the outlying areas, downtown looked at itself and was like, "Oh my goodness, what's going to happen?" Now we've got these piers that are no longer economically viable. There's nothing we can do with this industry. It's not coming back. How do we reinvent ourselves? And Baltimore, better than any other city on the East Coast that had the same opportunity, just did that, reinvented itself. And long before folks like the Urban Land Institute coined the term, urban entertainment zone, the city had added an aquarium, a science center, a convention center, hotels, the waterfront promenade, the festival market buildings, all these things that we take for granted a generation later were really a major rethink of what a downtown is. And we're clearly due for another reset on that. So it's a wonderful opportunity to have people looking at it with fresh set of eyes and saying, "How can we rethink our urban center? What can we do to make certain that we stay strong as a city?"
Sell me on that, Janet Marie. What needs to be done at a 100,000 foot level. It all needs to connect, right? You built Camden Yards as a connection to the Inner Harbor, which really was a dream of Governor Schaefer that was connecting the Science Center to the aquarium, to this mall in the middle, to hotels, to the convention center, to Fort McHenry, to Fells Point, to boats on water. Now, we have assets we didn't have then when you built the stadium. The whole Domino side and the whole Inner Harbor East and the waterway, we have assets we never had before. That we don't think of them as assets because the news is reporting about the crime, which is obviously a problem and an issue, right? But we look at Port Covington, and I'm never going to call it by that other name. There's only one peninsula in Baltimore, and it's Dundalk, and we're finding that out now that it's landlocked for the last 36 hours. By the way, I got breaking news as we're doing this, literally as Janet Marie Smith and I are discussing the future of Baltimore baseball. It is now official, Janet Marie. I literally just got the when you get the WNST text, you know it's official. But right here, 12:35, Major League Baseball unanimously approves David Rubenstein as new owner of the Baltimore Orioles. So it actually happened when you and I were talking.
Great.
How about that?
That's great. That's great. Well, congratulations to him. And
well, let's talk about Baltimore now. How does he, with this investment and Bloomberg and different people, and now what's happened with our bridge? If you're giving a symposium at Hopkins on this, what are the first 5 minutes you talk about of things to lift everything that a sports team and a structure located, right? Perfect location, 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 right? With Camden Yards.
Well, I think one thing that Baltimore has missed over the last 10 years or so is the kind of visionary thinking, master planning that defined it originally. There was no accident that Camden Yards was sited downtown. That was part of Schaefer's plan, was to connect all of these things. And we have become more project-driven over the last 20 years, which is frustrating. You know, the redevelopment of the old Procter & Gamble plan into what's now, you know, Under Armour's campus, about to change again. All of that work that Bill Streber did to establish that mix of uses in Locust Point where industry, to replace the industry. The Harbor East and the Harbor Point projects are also replacing the old Allied chemical plant, long gone for anyone under 50 years old, but still, you know, important when you study the history of Baltimore to know that all of that industrial land didn't change overnight. And in the 25, 30 years since Camden Yards opened and 40 years since the Harbor Pavilions had their ribbon cut, you know, we've changed again. We no longer have traditional financial institutions anchoring downtown. We no longer have traditional workplaces in one building, residential in other buildings. We don't commute to downtown the same way we used to. And so thinking of how our work environment has changed our residential environment and thus our cities, I think, is a really important element. You see many of the former office buildings being converted to residential, and that's a fantastic trend. But wouldn't it be even more fantastic if it was thought of as a holistic project and all of these things tied together instead of, well, this is going to be funded by the state and this is going to be funded by the city, and now we're going to have a developer come in and do that one and that one. And it just would be great to really have a strong vision of how these things connected.
Well, it's more than stadiums, and I think it's more than the team on the field,
right,
and
the
gambling money that's coming into baseball that's going to wind up funding it, and where media is going to go, and regional sports networks. And I mean, Rubenstein talked on Tuesday night in Baltimore, and it was a lot about, like, we got to get mass and peace and just we got to fix things and then fix things. And the one thing that you had a little bit of, and obviously Larry and EBW at the end and building it, was the money to do it, the funding to do it the right way and not be slapping Band-Aids on and doing things that really do serve the next 30 years, not the next 30 minutes. And this money sitting here for them. Now, the Ravens have already earmarked what they're going to do and build the disco and, like, inside the perimeter. I go through all that all the time. I do wonder that Rubenstein's play wouldn't be about just having a parade. It feels to me, and I can't wait to meet him. I've seen his work and I know of his legend. I think there's a greater play here in the way for resurrecting the city than there just is, no offense with the Dodgers or anywhere else, to say, we want to be a community member, but There's no neighborhood around Chavez Ravine up on the top the way this is in the city that's been very, very challenged, that was built by you 30 years ago, that whatever we're doing with the Inner Harbor and the stadium and the whole area, as you point out, this overriding umbrella, but it does feel like there's some money in a way that...
Well, except that the funds that have been set aside at the moment are meant to be spent inside the gate. And I think what you're talking about is a connection to the urban fabric, which is critically important. And we forget about things when they're 30 years ago. But since Camden Yards opened, the Zenith residential building, the Homewood Suites, the Hilton Hotel, you can hate it if you want to, but still, we did not build Camden Yards a block away from the action in the hopes that it would always be surface parking. And the city has released their hold on all of the surface parking in downtown and allowed it to be developed. I think the question is, can the Orioles, the Ravens, the Stadium Authority work with the city and think about how to take that connection even further? And credit Larry McKino, who was president of the Orioles during the Eli Jacobs tenure when Camden Yards was built, that there was a real goal to make it fit into the city, to save the warehouse, to use the ground floor of the warehouse for retail, for restaurants, to have Utah Street open every day as an extension of the public promenade. And during COVID, the Orioles shut a lot of that down, and I hope it comes back because it feels, you know, like something akin to a courthouse these days, and you really want that energy every day, not just on game days. And I hope we get that back.
Well, I tell people all the time, and look, I had to do some true history with the death of Peter and the ballpark and the timing. You jumped my Facebook thread this weekend to sort of defend the truth, not my honor, just sort of like what really happened, because I know I look young and sexy, but I'm old. And I was here when it all happened, and I was sort of a grown-up when it all happened, and I was on the radio when it all happened, talking about it every day after reporting on it at the newspaper every day for almost a decade before that. So I know what I'm talking about, but when you built this stadium, Boog's Barbecue was going to be served for lunch every day. All year round. And there was going to be a Christmas promenade and a spring thing and an Easter egg hunt. And the Camden Club was going to be the Roost Chris. And nobody was going to go to Roost Chris or Morton's because they were going to have the best steaks and the best crab cake. And like, none of that really, that was the dream. That when Stedman and I walked through there back in 1992 before the Mets game, that was what you and Larry and everyone dreamed of. And Peter bought team. And
well, it's just a reminder. You know, I can't say who did what, but it's a reminder that you can't just build something and expect it to perform. You need to operate it in that manner. So really thinking about how the ground plane, the street scene can be added to the retail environment of downtown, thinking about how you take any use that has an everyday activity and put it on display. It's very much a part of the way that teams that have moved into urban environments have started to think about it. I mean, look at the San Francisco Giants or the Boston Red Sox, both of whom are in the middle of urban environments. They have an entirely separate company under their umbrella that does nothing but lease space, book parties, bring in conventions. It's all about being more than just home to 81 games a year. That's great to have, you know, 3 million people a year come to your ballpark to watch games, but all the better if it never goes dark. And I think that that's an opportunity for Camden Yards is to press the reset button on how it fits into the city and how it can be more itself. You know, yes, there are development opportunities that could be created around Camden Yards, but there's also more that one could do that facility itself that was set up to behave that way, but maybe never reached its full potential.
Jana Marie Smith is our guest here on WNST Baltimore Positive. I want to give her my love. She's been traveling. She's in LA. She's literally, turn your camera just so everybody can see what right field at Dodger Stadium looks like and that crazy bullpen you built down there to distract the visiting pitchers with all the disco music down there in right field and selling me two baggers and malts and all the, my dad and I sat in the right field bleachers out there, saw Rick Sutcliffe pitch for the Dodgers in 85 during Fernando Mania. I love your state. Look at that center field scoreboard. bird. Look at those palm trees, Janet Marie. So Janet Marie's out in
Now, to
LA,
be
but
fair, that bullpen's been there since 1962. I didn't have anything to do with that location, but it is a spectacular one.
you know, if you just allowed me one that I bring a cot into your office and just sleep there just to say I did it, you know what I mean? Be kind of like sleeping under the stars kind of thing. But you're from Baltimore, so you come home to Camden Yards and all this potentiality. Since the last
Be
time we
back in
booked this,
48 hours. You're right about that.
well, there you go. There you go. We'll have good weather for you. Bring your weather back with you. It'll be 70 degrees this weekend. Peter and Peter's legacy. You know, I had my own issues. I talked about it. People were reaching to me on Saturday. People were hitting me on the internet. You jumped the thread. Widely reported here that he saved baseball for Baltimore. The stadium was built. The lease was 30 years. Just false facts to some degree. But I know Peter did good things too. And I'm going to make you the person that speaks of that, because his death is going to get lost in this Francis Scott Key Bridge issue and new ownership. I mean, things are happening fast here, Janet Marie. Since you left home, you're coming home to a different city next week, a different owner, a different everything. But I know you had fondness for Peter.
I did. I had a really nice relationship with Peter. I just to kind of set the tone for those who don't know my background, I worked for Larry Lucchino and Eli Jacobs from 89 till until they sold the club to Peter in 93. And oversaw the development of Camden Yards for them. And then I stayed with the Orioles for about a year after Peter bought the club, but then came back to work for him from 2009 to 2012. And my responsibilities largely were he brought me back in order to oversee the redevelopment of the Ed Smith Stadium in Twin Lakes Park in Sarasota. But it coincided with the 20th year anniversary of Camden Yards. And he asked me for ideas of what we could do at Camden Yards. So we did bring in a new concessionaire. We redid the concessions on the main concourse. We built the bar on top of the batter's eye. We did the bronze sculptures and the picnic area and opened that up to be open every day. And so I really did have a not only a nice working relationship with him, but I had a chance to see how much he really loved Baltimore. And I think that's where you're referring to things being blurry. It was under Eli Jacobs that the Orioles signed a 30-year lease to stay in Baltimore and live at Camden Yards. And the ballpark was built under a memorandum of understanding. The lease was signed in 1992, just after the park was opened. So I think the Orioles' stability in Baltimore was secure. Peter was of Baltimore, loved the city, didn't want to see out of town ownership. And I think he bought the team in order to ensure that Baltimore was represented in the ownership. And he did, really did love the city and everything about it. And he's given generously to causes that we never know about. And some that are very visible. I don't go to Penn Station that I don't think about him. And the fact that he's got his parents' names on that beautiful building that the University of Baltimore built a dozen years ago.
My alma mater, by the way.
Well, congratulations, because it's a good one. And love that our mayor, Kurt Schmoke, is there as their head these days. But
Kurt
and
Schmoke, a part of the ownership group, you know, like, so he's involved in that too. So, yeah.
There's another good anchor for downtown. I think all those students being downtown is just a fantastic energy. So I do feel very positively about the tenure of Peter Angelos and the way he viewed the club. And I think that Sarasota, which you were just waxing gloriously about, is totally him. Peter was the one who said, "Let's go to Sarasota." There's a ballpark that was a little dump. The Red Sox had built it and then left, and Cincinnati Reds were there and they left. And Sarasota tried to woo the Red Sox, and they're like, "Nope, not going to that dump." And Andy MacPhail was head of baseball at the time. And he's like, "Look, Peter, this is one of the best locations in the Grapefruit League. You're right in the middle of everything." Peter loved the fact that the city itself had everything from a Holiday Inn to a Ritz-Carlton, that it had the opera, it had the museums, it had beaches, that it was a place that Baltimore fans could go and enjoy spring training and all the other offerings of a beautiful city in Florida. And he really advocated for that to happen. And it was Peter who was such a champion of the redevelopment of that little park. And it has ever since it opened, and we spent less than $40 million on something while everybody else in the Grapefruit League was building something brand new for $90 million. So for half the price, he got the best location in Florida, one of the best facilities. And I think that that's just, for me, to have worked on this little ugly duckling and turning it into a swan was one of the most joyous parts of my career.
Well, I walked it from right field to left field to right field, behind home plate, in front of home plate. I walked around, and it really is a beautiful place, and there's an energy about spring training and going down there and being a part of that. But I think there's more of an energy about to happen here at Camden Yards. You mentioned the deck in center field. You mentioned the statues in the park in the outfield at Camden Yards. Those are things that maybe you could have come up with in 1989 or 90 or 91, but time changes all of that, right? Like, things that are needed and necessary. If you had remodeled Dodger Stadium in 1989, it wouldn't have been the same as if you did it when you did it, right? So for the modern part of this, what are some modern things that a modern Camden Yards would have circa 2024 if you have to do it all over again? Things you're building in places that didn't exist in 1992.
Well, listen, the bars and those sculptures are things that probably could have only been added at that time when we opened Camden Yards in 92. You know, it seemed novel and radical to have this standing room over the bullpens and on the right field court. And even the bleacher seating in center field was like, really? You want to do that? Because the model at the time was build between the foul poles. That's all. And so this idea of making the outfield a party just wasn't the way we were thinking about watching baseball then. And the bronze sculptures, well, golly, Cal Ripken was still on the field. Eddie Murray was still on the field. You know, Jim Palmer was making a comeback. Our history wasn't old then. It wasn't bronze worthy in 1992. And so to be there 20 years later, yes, time does change the way you look at things.
And all those years the Yankees had led to that thing out in the outfield that they could go do that, right? Babe Ruth wasn't playing for the Orioles in the 1920s because there were no Orioles. Jana Marie, I know your time's short. Love you. Appreciate you. Please come home. Bring me some souvenirs or something, you know?
I'll bring the weather. That was a good idea.
You know what? Bring me a hug on behalf of the Key Bridge, and let's build Baltimore strong. All right?
Thanks for having me, Nestor.
Jana Marie Smith. All right, happy opening day to you. You already made me smile for Dodger Stadium. Jana Marie Smith, ladies and gentlemen, I am Nestor. We are WNST, AM 1570. Towson, Baltimore, we never stop talking. Baltimore, positive.